Welcome to Tax Conversations Africa, a five-part series on the use of research evidence in influencing government policies towards fair tax systems in Africa. In our previous episode, we looked at the recent demand for renegotiation of double taxation agreements in East Africa with a focus on Uganda.
Tax is the price we pay for living in a civilized society. However, the question on what tax system guarantees fair tax is highly contested. What is the role of civil society research evidence in influencing government policies towards tax systems in Africa? And how can policymakers use country-specific data to build fair tax systems on the continent? Welcome to Tax Conversations Africa, the podcast, offering alternative thought to African tax systems. Tax Conversations Africa is powered by Tax Justice Network Africa in partnership with the Institute for Economic Justice and the generous support from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. My name is Beza McConnon, and I will be your host today. It's not enough to simply generate good research. Research evidence will only be used to inform policy if it's accessible, valued in terms of ease of readability, and if policy recommendations are perceived to be clear and concise by policymakers. In the previous episode, we explored the use of research evidence in double tax negotiations in Uganda. On this final episode, we take stock of all the lessons learned by use of research evidence in tax policy formulation. I am joined by Alvin Mosioma, the Executive Director at Tax Justice Network Africa, and Gillard Isaacs, Director at the Institute of Economic Justice. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Beza.
Excellent. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Looking across the continent, it's evident that URE by policymakers is a vital step in creating an enabling environment for trade and investments by having the right tax systems. Evidently, there are a lot of similarities among the African countries. Can some of the approaches be replicated, or do we need to customize everything for every country? Gillard, I'll start with you.
Excellent. Thanks very much. Of course, Africa is not a homogeneous environment. Africa is not a country, as we say. And there's a lot of nuances across states. And therefore, careful thought needs to be given on a country-by-country basis. On the other hand, what I think this research shows is that there are some generalizable strategies which effectively use research evidence in influencing policy. And importantly, we need to move beyond what we sort of traditionally do, which is often just sort of workshops with policymakers, and engage in deeper processes, both in the methods of collecting evidence and in transmitting it. And these must be tailored on a country-by-country basis.
Great. Thank you, Gillard. Alvin.
Thank you, Beza. I agree a lot, I think, with what Gillard has said. There's usually the tendency to like develop one-size-fits-all solutions, and we have seen this be practiced particularly in the economic policy area, where solutions that are developed that are then kind of cut and paste exercise. And what these researchers show, and as Gillard has pointed out, is really important that you have tailored messages that are contextualized to the different country specifics. The message might remain the same, but it needs to be tailored. The uptake of evidence that is produced through research will need the message nuanced to appeal to the different target groups, also to the different constituencies in the different countries. And we have seen this, for example. You note that although in what came out in this research that the different actors were working with the members of parliament as a target group, as a target for the research uptake, their approach was very different because, of course, the political dynamics in those different countries differ from country to country, and therefore it's important that we are investing in tailoring this message. Having said that, I think also it's important to see to what extent can we learn from different countries, what has worked in one country, and how can that be replicated. So the argument here is that, yes, there are particular things that can be replicated from different country to the other, but also to avoid a one-size-fits-all and to ensure that the research is contextualized to the different contexts in those countries and the different audiences.
So at what point should CSOs involve policymakers in the journey, Alvin?
Yeah, I think, again, what this research shows, that the areas where the uptake has been successful has been in areas where the involvement of policymakers has been from the very beginning, so that you are not coming up with the final report and then trying to pitch it to policymakers, but you're involving policymakers from the design phase. It's important to try and ensure that we are doing what you can call demand-driven research, that the issues that you are trying to address have traction. They relate to the circumstances on the ground, and there is need for those researchers. There is need for, or there's a gap that this research is trying to fill. So the involvement of policymakers, the different target audiences from the very beginning, from the research design, from the research review, and then at the end in terms of developing the recommendations of those researchers, and then the implementation, I think, looking at policymakers as partners in this research is very critical to ensure a higher appetite and a higher uptake of these researches.
Thank you. Thank you, Alvin. Gillard, would you like to say something?
Yeah, I would certainly agree there. I would add a caution on the flip side, you know, just about the relative power dynamics and the a caution of involving policymakers in a manner which might allow their particular interests to influence and color the research being undertaken in a way which is inappropriate. So I think that there needs to be a involvement, absolutely. That involvement, as Alvin indicates, needs to be thoughtful in a way which empowers, which involves, which includes, but also in a way which maintains the integrity of what the CSO is undertaking. One way of doing this is to identify like-minded policy actors, or what you might think of as a champion within policy circles, with whom the CSO feels in the first stage it would be useful and productive to work with, and then to over time expand that circles around who's being influenced. And the Tunisian case study, you know, showed well how the involvement and identification of policymakers early on really ensured the success of the initiative.
That's interesting. So there are both sides of the coin. Can a CSO build a nonpartisan reputation?
I'll jump in here. Thanks, Beza. I think that the study sort of really shows how the perception of the researching party, so in this instance of the CSOs, and how they are perceived by those in policy circles is a important factor in the uptake. And in particular, you know, the perception of not being politically affiliated is quite important. Of course, you know, CSOs are multidimensional actors and are driving particular agendas. At times they are sort of technical support only, but at other times they have their own express agenda. So, you know, I would say that there is an importance of not being seen to be overtly politically affiliated, that policymakers don't want to be seen to be working with a biased party. At the same time, you know, both from this research and in our own experience, I would say that the rigor of the research is also really important. If that research stands up to scrutiny, then it's much harder to dismiss that CSO on the grounds of being non-objective. So the ability to present a objective, unbiased technical expertise to the extent to which is appropriate for that CSO, combined with presenting really strong and rigorous research evidence, is a combination that's important.
Beza, if I can, if I may jump in, I think the point that Gilad makes is a very important one. The point of nonpartisanness is a very fluid framing, particularly in the civil society sector. I fully agree that on one side we should try and make sure that the output of the researches that we are producing stand the test of time, that they are credible, that they are qualitative. But at the same time, it's also important to underscore that the tax agenda is a political issue, and depending on the framing, it is nonpartisan. I think is a term I think that needs to be a little bit unpacked, because they're particularly in an era where this we live in a time of the neoliberal dogma that has continued to inform and influence policy in Africa. I think it's important to ensure that even when we are putting these researches out there, we are very clear in terms of where we stand on some of these political conversations and how we are arriving at those solutions. So I think more important in my sense, nonpartisan is important, but more important than that in my sense is the credibility of the research, is the quality of the research, so that even if it is not, the recommendations are not being implemented, they're at least questioning some of the pathways that many of our governments are taking.
I'm in full agreement there.
Yep. Thank you. I know that several African countries have also developed their own internal mechanism for generating evidence and data in their decision making. How then do we complement this with what the CSOs are offering? Alvin, maybe I can start with you.
Yeah, thank you, Beza. So I think that for me, the key words is something that already Gilad mentioned earlier in his submission, is the collaborative research. Of course, it's important to ensure that these researchers is particularly working with institutions that are like-minded, that are pushing similar agendas. It's very, very important to work collaboratively, both with relevant government institutions, but also other research institutions and civil society organizations. These were, for example, a key in this specific research where we developed this piece of work together with the Institute of Economic Justice in South Africa, led by Gilad. So collaborative work is very important. The second point is complementarity, to avoid duplication. Sometimes there are researches that are done that are kind of duplicating what already exists. So trying to ensure that the research is fitting a particular purpose, that there's a gap that this research is trying to fill, and it's complementing already existing researches. Of course, there are a number of already many African countries, there are government think tanks that are already conducting some level of research. So to ensure that how that the research that civil society organizations is conducting is either complementing or even challenging some of the positions that are being developed by some of these research institutions.
In complementing what Alvin said, and this speaks to your earlier question about us, you know, to what extent do we use similar strategies and to what extent do we analyze a context? And analyzing a context is not simply a matter of saying countries are different. It's a matter of analyzing the political economy of how decisions are being made within country itself. There's not necessarily only one actor in a tax space. There might be a tax authority. There is a Ministry of Finance. There's others within governments even who have sometimes similar and sometimes competing interests. And so when we're analyzing and saying, okay, so what research and what evidence is being produced inside government or other policymakers, and where does CSO research fit? And as Elvin says, that is both in complementing and in challenging. I think it's really important that CSOs map what that landscape looks like in quite detail, so that we're not producing research kind of targeted in like a generalized way, but that we're producing research which takes account of a constant actors and understanding the varying positions, interests, and of course work they themselves are.
Thank you both for that. We also know that CSO research work can be resource intensive. How can funders support civil society organizations in their work?
Yeah, thank you, Beza. I think that funders, of course, have a very important role to play in ensuring that the uptake of some of these researches is higher. Understandably so, that research is very, very resource intensive. And I think that there are many efforts we see where resources that are dedicated to research are not sufficient. And what we end up, or the outcome of that, is you have researches that are being churned out that whose quality is very questionable. So I think investing intensely in ensuring that there's sufficient resources to research work, that I think is important. But the second important thing is understanding the political economy of the different countries, because a research conducted today does not have to translate to policy outcomes tomorrow. There's a huge time lag, and I tend to feel that many a times there's a lot of pressure on civil society to kind of this very quick turnaround. Yes, we did this research. How does the research contribute to this particular policy change the year that follows? Some of this research, it might not contribute to an immediate time, an immediate policy change, but contribute to influencing the policy conversations in the long term, which then can lead to the kind of policy change that we all aspire. So the patience that we need from funders is also very, very important in understanding the political dynamics in those particular countries, what actors, what the power dynamics that also play a role in terms of the research uptake. This understanding, I think, on the part of the funders is critical.
And I would add there that I think that understanding that political economy, which I think, as Elvin notes, is essential, also points to the issue which, you know, many of us would want in many areas of our funding, but is the question of being adaptive as the circumstances change and evolve, and the flexibility needed within that, you know. So in a concrete sense, perhaps in one's grant and proposal, one speaks about influencing parliamentarians, but halfway through, what you actually realize is that this conversation is being held in the Ministry of Finance, the political economy in that country. What you actually need to do is a different form of research for that area. So the, you know, the ability to be flexible and adaptive is really crucial. And I think that's crucial in this area, but also in, you know, other areas of civil society work. And that calls for flexibility from funders, you know, which many funders like you have funded this, you know, certainly offer. You know, that's an important element also.
Thank you, Gillard. Could you give me a quick recap of the general factors influencing uptake of URE by policymakers on the
Yes, thanks. I would say that, you know, it's really important that the research evidence is clear, it's concise, it's accessible, it's easy to read, and that it addresses the issues which policymakers face and therefore is very useful to them. With that, the second would be that it is targeted, it is tailored, it is thoughtful in who its audience is, therefore it is crafted in an appropriate way. And this spoke about earlier involvement own through whom actually a source of on of understanding and of input, but also to ensure there is endorsement and buy-in and ongoing feedback loops to the relevance of the work is there. So that's of what might be other factors.
Thank you for that, Gilead. Alvin.
Yeah, without wanting to repeat, I think Gilead has provided a very good summary. For me, there are four things that I think will be important that builds upon what Gilead is saying. One, when you look at the message itself, there's need that message is robust. The message is thorough, it's thorough research. The message is well packaged, it's tailored, and it's made accessible. That I think is very critical. When we look at the messenger, which is really the generator of that of the message, which is the civil society organizations in this particular case, particularly in an area like tax, which is, as we said earlier, is very politically contested, the credibility of the messenger is very important. We talked about the non-partisanship, credibility, relationships that civil society organizations need to build. To the policymakers prior to those researches, the networks that needs to be made. Those are all very important. Then the third point is the recipient of the message itself, which are the policymakers, involving those policymakers from the very beginning, understanding that these policymakers are operating within a different context and ensuring that the messages that is getting to these policymakers is tailored to their different circumstances. And lastly, the question of the power relations. I think it's really, really important that sometimes it's not just knowing what the solution is, but there are different actors and different influences that determine what at the end policymakers end up doing, the international organizations, local actors, the private sector, and the different actors that are also involved in pushing very specific agendas. Being aware of those power relations and the power dynamics, I think, is also key. And then adapting, that's the point of adaptability, I think, that Gilead mentioned. Those are the things, the points I would like to add.
Alvin and Gilead, thank you so much for your insight.
Thanks once again for the invitation.
Excellent. Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Tax Conversations Africa, the podcast, powered by the Tax Justice Network Africa in partnership with the Institute for Economic Justice and the generous support from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. This is the last episode of this 5-part series. For more information and episodes, please visit our website, www.taxjusticeafrica.net. For questions, comments, or opinions, you can email us on info@taxjusticeafrica.net. Thank you.